Up dog fella, look good, feel good, play good. We got some new Adidas golf swag coming the fella's way.
I don't know if any new golf swag would help your game, but I love it. Adidas is excited to introduce new offerings within the Go-To apparel collection that allows you to bring your style to the golf course. Not the traditional golf uniform, Go-To brings a fresh attitude to the game wherever you play. You'll look good on and off the course while enjoying all the technical benefits that let you play your best.
Featuring streetwear-inspired style, the Go-To collection rewrites all the rules and encourages you to express your style through every swing. Explore the new Go-To collection on adidas.com/golf.
Fella.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to a fresh new episode of Missing Curfew. I'm Shane O'Brien, as always, here at Action Park Studios in Beverly Hills with my boy Scotty Upshaw.
Obs, thanks for having me. Big week here in Masters.
Masters week. Updog, you're looking good today. Good life habit tonight. You're looking good, buddy. You're looking fresh.
I try. Yeah, I got up this morning ready to rock.
Yeah. Captain Connolly in the booth.
What's going on? You guys like my mustache?
November looks good.
Go mustache
by the way,
cons.
Donate.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna donate
$5, $10.
I'm gonna donate to the cause. I like that you get the tie on again. 2 weeks back to back with the tie. We appreciate the professionalism around here.
Right. Yeah, I got some other meetings. We're going big. We're going broad here. We're
not the most important thing on the docket today, is what you're saying.
I'm not wearing a tie because of you, but of course you're important.
Okay. And on the East Coast, as always, Jimmy Broadway Scoops Hayes. What's up, Jimbo?
What's up, boys? I'm fired up for this Masters week. Hopefully we can get some money back. My bookie is killing me with the NFL right now.
Yeah, the NFL, the updog was kind of complaining
Fuck,
about
I
that.
I hear you,
Jim. Right up. The updog had a tough loss last night with the Pats. Masters week, Jimbo touched on it. Updog, it's my favorite week. Obviously, it's different this year with being in November and COVID. We all know that. But I think you're the only guy. Jimbo, have you ever been to Augusta?
No, I would love to go, though.
Yeah, me too. So, updog, you're the only guy that's been there, so... Just real quick, what's it like going there? I know you had a great time, and I think, who'd you end up going there with?
I went with, so this is 2009, I was playing in Phoenix, had ACL surgery February, wrote myself off for the year, but had a chance, told my doctors and team, they went on the road, I'm like, hey, I'm gonna head to Augusta, catch out moving Saturday at Augusta, and check it out. So anyway, I went with my boy Blaine Stewart. My financial guy, Brian Coughlin, and a buddy of ours, Bruce Baker. So four of us. But we got in on late Friday night. We hit the Hooters downtown. I think that's the only place rocking and rolling. And Saturday we went through – I remember we got there. We went through 16 – the entrance at 16, which is the par three everyone sees. They put the hole in one pin on Sunday. You hear the roars from the back nine on there. But we bought our chairs. We're told you lay that chair down. So you go in and buy fold-up chairs. And there's the ones you see all over TV on the day. But wherever you lay that chair down, you put a little card in the back with your name on it. No one touches your chair for the rest of the day. So wherever you put that chair
is unbelievable.
Is yours. So people on Saturday and Sunday, they will, when the gates open, you're not allowed to run. You have to speed walk. They will speed walk to the favorite place on the course, drop their chair, and that chair is theirs for the rest of the day. They can go grab hot dogs, beers. $2 beers, $2 hot dogs at Augusta, two of them.
They want
for a 20 spot.
You'd have to roll me out of Augusta National at the end of the day, I'm sure.
So, but I would have to say my highlight, boys, was catching our boy Freddie Couples. At the time, we didn't know Freddie. Freddie's a member at our club, Big Canyon. But he was in contention Sunday on the back nine. And I had our chair put on the 12th tee on Amen Corner. And we caught Freddie coming in the second last group, every Cougar, every MILF, and there's a lot of them walking around.
They love Freddie.
They love Freddie. Fucking Freddie. It was good hair, fucking silky swing.
He still looks good, man. We've played a couple weeks. Anyways, yeah, he still looks good.
He doesn't age at all, that guy.
So catching him, it was actually Tiger Woods, boys. It was Tiger Woods' first tournament back after the little hiatus.
With the injury or the accident with the old lady got pinched. Hand in the cookie jar, Tiger.
So that was Tiger's first tournament back.
Several times.
He was in contention till the back nine too. So it was cool. Phil Mickelson ended up winning that tournament, but something I'll always remember. Augusta and that Magnolia Lane.
Magnolia Lane.
I saw that thing from the street too. You hear those, you see those trees coming out of the street. It's pretty wild.
I love that at Broadway Cons. I love that they do the honor system at Augusta. Let's picture the U.S. Open at Bethpage. Like, if you put your chair down there, you New Yorkers are not just going to let some guy leave their chair there at your cons. You're not going to go with the honor system at the U.S. Open, is it?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I played a small money game yesterday, and there's people sweating my fucking nuts about certain things that I did. You know, you gotta if you pick up your golf ball to line it up for a putt, I don't know.
I have the markdown.
You gotta have the markdown, cons.
Markdown, yeah.
I mean, we're playing fucking $10 a hole. I got the markdown. I'm going to miss the putt. Who cares? But yes, I would imagine that at the Masters or something crazy like that, you don't get away with much. I mean, that guy got kicked out because his caddy was testing the dirt in the bunker, right?
Yeah, that was at Benedict's, the U.S. Amateur. But
how big of a deal was that?
I mean, that cost the kid the match. And funny story, we went to Bandon Dunes for Uppy's Dachshund golf trip. And Loops had this caddy. And this kid was a fucking beauty, but an absolute stoner, right?
Yeah, Uppy, were you in our group?
I was playing in the group ahead of behind
okay,
you.
I was so in the group. Tell a story. So he was Loople's caddy, and we get to this par five on the back, and Loops has been sandbagging us all week
yeah,
long.
Loops is getting way too many fucking shots.
He's been shooting way too good for a 12 handicap. And we get to the back. We hit the pen. We're feeling pretty good. We just get nice and baked. And this caddy is looking at us, and he's telling Loops, all right, hit the five. Loops crushes his drive on a par five. And now it's like a over a bunker, kind of to the left, blind shot. And Loops is just, he's like, yeah, bomb it over that way. Fuck, you'll hit the green, no problem. And Loops is like looking at this green. He's like, fuck, it seems kind of far. So he just ropes a five wood, and he comes up what looks like 220 yards short of this one green. And he's looking at the guy, and the guy's like, Caddy's like, where are you going? He's like, you fucking green's behind the bunker on this side.
So Loops there was two like, holes. There was
yeah,
two
there
holes.
Was two holes.
And the stoner caddy fucking told Loops to go down the right, and Loops ripped it, came up short, and Loops was like, what the fuck, man? So we could tell Al that could happen to that caddy because he was just a little stoner beauty. So
was that the same caddy same that got caddy. In trouble?
Same caddy that oh, cost wow. the guy. Cons was on the last
been cheating
hole.
For a
good
while.
Guy, though. Good guy.
I just think as Uppy, he's a great guy. I just think he was so baked that he probably looked at it and was like, oh.
You can't, if you're a caddy, you can't cost your guy. I don't care. No. I don't care if he's the greatest guy in the world. You can't cost your
especially
guy.
Especially when he's not your real caddy. You're just the fill-in caddy for the week.
You need these guys at Bandon Dunes because Cons is so windy, and you need these caddies to tell you where to hit it during certain winds. So,
right.
They had to hire these guys, and the poor guy cost them.
Yeah, that was a huge tournament for that kid, too.
That's just a joke. I'm sorry, but when they become that strict for something your caddy accidentally does in a stupid bunker, I don't know.
I agree. I couldn't believe it cost them. Hazy.
Stupid sport.
Wrapping up the Masters, is there a guy who you like this week? If you had to put you on the spot here, if you put a little of that hard-earned cheddar you made in the National League, who would you put it on?
With the odds, it's... I don't know. I'm looking at Jason Day at 40-1 and Ricky Fowler at 66-1. That's probably like the guys that I'm putting my dough on this week. But all I honestly care for is Tiger to be in contention come the weekend. Then it's fun to watch.
I'll tell you what, Jason Day had a top five last week in Houston. So,
yep.
You know what, for our listeners out there, Broadway Jimmy Scoops may be on to something here. Updog, is there anyone that you kind of pulling for or you think? We wanted to bet.
The big kahuna. The
Bryson DeChambeau.
Fuck, is he just... He gets bigger and bigger.
Yeah, he's on the O'Brien. He's on the O'Brien diet. That fucking guy.
What's he? He's 8-1. I think he's 8-1
to win. Yeah, plus 750 right
now.
Yeah,
DJ's 9-1. I like DJ.
I like DJ too. With no fans, I think with his personality, just kind of a goofy guy, I think with no fans might help him. The bet we wanted to take on the Sprinter Van up Broadway was we wanted to take Freddie to make the cut because Couples always seems to play great at Augusta. We played with him a couple weeks ago, like we said, he was striping it. But whatever site the Updog has doesn't have Freddie.
I can't find it.
If you can find it, let us know because we want to take Freddie to make the cuts.
Will your old man take that bet?
Yeah, my old man, yeah. Business is down. Tickets are down this year. My old man's phone's open. You guys can do it. Action's always encouraged.
Well, no juice, though, right? If we lose, no juice. Mr. Curfew
always
discount.
Juice. Always okay. Juice. Always juice.
Okay, maybe a discount on the juice. I don't know. Mr. Curfew right here.
We'll give you 8% discount.
But, yeah, Masters Week, boys, I'm fired up. We were watching it on the way up in the Sprinter Van live at the Masters. You got to love that shit. There was a picture that surfaced here, Hazy. I don't know if you saw it. I think I sent it to you. I know you're a big Drake guy, OVO. The great one with the swag, with the OVO hoodie, with the nice three-quarter P jacket and some National League slacks you had on. What did you think when you saw that right away?
Oh, I loved it. And I think Drake was probably happier than me. Having the great one rocking your brand, that's just – That's unbelievable. But the one thing I want to know is, you know, you got the Jordan brand. How come Gretzky doesn't have his own brand? I feel like this guy could crush it. And he's looking good in that picture.
That's a great question. Winner never ups. Winner never had his own
clothing line, did he? He's had his wine. He's had
his restaurant, Toronto. Yeah, used to have old Wayne Gretzky.
Does he have
there.
Like a 99 golf yeah. shirt, like the Greg Norman, like Shark?
Yeah, he must have something like that.
Yeah, if it is, it didn't.
No,
do
but he had a good restaurant in Toronto. Wayne Gretzky's in the summertime in Toronto. You go up to the rooftop Oasis.
Yeah.
Ooh, hazy. I've seen the ball well back in the day, actually, Oasis.
I've been there. I went there during a Maple Leafs development camp. I was there with all the fellas.
Before my draft, I went in there and met Gretzky, which was crazy. My mom, when she was pregnant with me, long story, walked through the airport in Edmonton, saw Wayne Gretzky. Gretzky actually said hello to her and, like, touched her belly. So my mom always says that this is, like, this crazy
gift
that
I was given
as, like, when she was. And then, sure enough, my draft night, the night before my draft, we walk in and he's sitting with my world junior coach, Stan Butler. So I went over and said hi and brought him back to the table. He introduced himself to my parents. My mom told him a quick story and you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah. Gretzky's a great coach. Dude. Great
I was just going to ask you, I've never even met Wayne all my years played against him, obviously, when he was coaching the Updog. I'd love to get him on to just talk about coaching the Updog. That could be a whole podcast. But how did you meet the great one, Con?
It's funny. I met him the same day I met Carcillo. It was at, you know how at the Staples Center they have the ice box? Which are the greatest seats in professional
the benches
sports.
Or right
between the benches.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Gretzky was going for his 100th win as a coach. And Carcillo was on the team. And I was sort of in that seat all the way to the right. So Carcillo was like sitting next to me through the glass. And he's like, what are you doing tonight? I was like, looking at him, right? So I could see Gretzky and Tocchet kind of looking at us. And I was like, why, you want to go out? We're having a full conversation, by the way, during the game. He scores like, no joke, bro. You can look it up. The guy scores a sports center goal.
Car bomb does.
Skates to center ice and points at me in the stands. I'm like, oh, this guy's amazing. The end of the game, Gretzky taps on the glass. He's like, would you mind coming back and meeting my guy that you had all riled up the whole game? So I went back. But Gretzky's cool. He took us out for golf. And when I was doing my 30 for 30, you know, about the Islanders, like Wayne Gretzky doesn't need to sit down for an interview to talk about how he lost to the Islanders, but he just said, yeah, man, what's, you know, and he just, boom, he was there. He's just a good dude, man. He really is.
So when they lost to the Islanders, was that his first time in the Stanley Cup Finals, and then he went on to go on the run, right?
Well, he tells the story how, you know, the year that he scored all those points, when he had 214 points or whatever, the Islanders, whatever, I know, roll your eyes about me talking about the Islanders, but the Islanders shut him out. He had 0 points in the Finals, and they got swept. And he said, you know, the way the locker rooms are set up, that you got to walk past the Islander locker room. And they said when they walked past the Islander's locker room, they were all covered in ice and banged up. And we were all squeaky clean. And they said going into camp the next year, said we need to look like that to win the cup. And then they beat the Islanders the following year.
I'd like to see the game footage from that Stanley Cup Finals. How much abuse is a great one taking
well,
that?
He didn't get a point?
Nah, like
held did he even scoreless. 214 office? Points during the regular season and had a goose egg.
That is unbelievable. With the swag, though, Hazy, I'm a huge Drake guy. I know you know that. When I saw the OVO hoodie on the great one, I was like, he wears that outfit. I mean, he could do damage no matter what. But this guy fucks is what I'm saying. This guy fucks.
Do you think
he
that's his wife that. Saying, Wayne, get with it? You know what I mean? Like,
it's probably Janet.
Where does that? What?
Where
what's
is
the
he going?
How long ago was the photo
it?
Taken?
It just came out yesterday.
It just came out. Does that mean it was taken yesterday?
Drake has it on his Instagram too.
Did he?
Right?
Yeah. The first time I saw it, I was doing Sportsnet last night and saw it. I was like, wow, this is unbelievable. I got to talk to the Missing Curfew crew about this.
It's a good outfit. I don't know that I can pull that off.
I think you could.
I'm too short for the 3-quarter jacket.
True. You'd have to go just standard.
He looked young too.
Right.
He looked young.
He looks like he's maybe not drinking, and he looks good, man. Yeah, That's why I wasn't. I'm surprised that was recent.
He didn't have the whiskey face going like he normally does he? Usually he's got that nice little rosy, great one whiskey face going.
He could take a Grey Goose and soda down with the best of them.
When we were playing that round of golf, he would be like chipping out from the grass, and he would like chip one up onto the green and roll it couple inches from the cup and go, got her in the nickname.
Yeah, sick swag. So we were lucky enough to have Steven Stamkos on last podcast, and Stammer did an unbelievable job, and thanks again to him. And for our listeners, I hope you guys enjoyed it. And just a couple things that he had touched on. First of all, the cup would sink. Am I the only meathead that
I did not know that?
Okay.
I would have bet my life the cup
floats.
I would have bet the cup floats. And okay, we came to the conclusion the cup sinks.
Boys. They should look into that.
Yeah, has it ever sank before? How have we never heard of it sank? It must have, like, at a cottage in Ontario or in British Columbia or wherever.
Or in someone's pool?
Someone's pool?
Yeah.
Does it fall off the back of the boat and the guy's got the cup guy, Conn's boy's got to dive in with the white gloves and
it's got to have a chip in it.
Go to the bottom of Lake Muskoka and grab it up, or what?
I don't know, but I have a story about this cup almost fucking drowning in a Vegas pool when I was with the St. Louis Blues 2 years ago.
So you knew that?
Yeah, no, I seen it almost go in. I saw Tyson Fury's, one of his fucking henchmen, one of his boys.
The boxer Tyson Fury.
Yes, but the boxer Tyson Fury. I show up and I'm partying with the Blues. They won their cup. I did not stay. I stayed fucking 6 feet apart. I was doing COVID.
Social
distancing. I was social distancing.
He was fucking doing damage.
He didn't pull Flowers.
No, I was not. Flowers is fucking trying his best to stick broads on top of that.
Flowers gets another shout out every week.
But so Tyson Fury and his whole crew come in and the boys have the hot tub, like, going, you know the thing at Wet Republic? They have the fucking pools with the hot tub and
sure
the private cabana. So they're
sure
all
do.
In the hot tub. Yep. David Perron's carrying around this thing, and he's showing it to the pool, like, to the fucking masses at the pool party. And
was
he's
the
got
place
it over
going
his head.
Wild?
The place was going wild. All, like, kind of trashy broads, just all
perfect.
Doing their thing. One of Tyson Fury's buddies comes over and pushes David Perron from behind right into the hot tub. Like, the fucking cup almost flew over the glass. Bouncers come over, chase this guy out of the club. It was one of Tyson Fury's best buddies. And Perron managed to hold on to this thing. Like 40 pounds getting pushed over babes into the pool. It was crazy. But
I don't hang on to that.
Thing
I
didn't
think
say,
that,
no,
I let
there's
that
no
go.
Way that thing go. If he let that go, it was hurting someone. And everyone had their cameras out and filming.
Right,
it was
crazy. It would have knocked somebody out. It could have killed
someone. It would have been bad.
Also, too, the one thing I would say, you know, about the Stanley Cup, like more so than any other sport, when that Stanley Cup shows up at a place, I don't care if you've ever watched a hockey game in your life, it's a fucking showstopper.
I couldn't agree more. And Uppy mentioned this when he went to Vegas, and same thing when I went to Ryan O'Reilly's Stanley Cup party cons. When he pulled it out, Factor, and we went back to have a J-More or a Blue Label, I was still like, holy fuck,
in
every
awe,
time you
right.
see it. Yeah, hey, Broadway?
Oh, yeah, that thing is, like you said, that thing's turning heads if you're walking into a club with that. That's,
big star power.
That's an easy way to get laid.
That's why I was so upset when I heard they take it away at midnight, boys. You can't be taking it away at midnight.
I think that's the
not
company line.
So anyways, anybody with the boys out, win it out there in the future, that fucker sinks, so keep her on land. Eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep her on land.
Heads up on those little boats, boys.
And just one thing about Stammer, too, boys, and we're all old pros here, and you know, when he said, we asked him, Uppy, what was the turning point? You know, you guys have been through some tough times, your turning point, and he said, Broadway and Cons, their trip to Sweden. Their five or six days they went out, they got banged up, and their veteran group and all their group felt like that was the time it was a turning point. And for me as an old pro, it made my heart warm a little bit that that's still the mentality that's still happening in the NHL.
That's why you have guys in your team like the Shattenkirks and Patty Maroons and guys that keep the Killhorns, guys that just keep fucking the, you know, the camaraderie, the tightness of the group when things get shitty, because things do get shitty during 82-game season. It's like things aren't always fucking positive around here, especially when the coaches get on you. People's wives are all over them for different people. There's a lot of different things that, you know, bring you down throughout the year. It's fucking cold, whether you're in Ottawa or Calgary. And you need guys around that keep things fucking smooth and make you feel good. And a trip like that is just what the doctor ordered for those boys.
On a lesser level, when we started Entourage, after everybody was cast, before we started shooting the pilot, Mark Wahlberg chartered the bird and got all the boys on the plane.
That's awesome.
For an epic weekend in Vegas. And then when we stepped on the set, we had a little
chemistry,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah, we were a little bit, like, you know, we saw each other at, like, different, you know,
yeah.
We got to see what each other's hangovers looked like, yeah. And got to
got
see,
to
like, the
about,
good, the
hey,
bad.
Hey, where where'd you end up there the other night, kind of thing?
Yeah, but it worked. Obviously, a 14-day trip to on the other side of the world is next level. But, yeah, I'm sure that's good bonding.
Yeah. So, Hazy, I got a question, and I got a night, and I know UpDog does. Was there a night throughout your career, obviously it doesn't take to win the Stanley Cup because we know how hard that is, but where your team came together – and you kind of made a turning point with a big win, a big night out. Did that ever happen to you throughout your career?
Yeah, the one that rings a bell is the year I played in New Jersey, the year that I was basically healthy scratch the whole year, but great locker room guy, so
great.
They kept
glue
me around.
Glue guy.
Stay
glue
warm.
Glue guy, I had to be there.
Stay
and
warm.
The big night we had was rookie party in Vegas at that marquee. And we're coming down the end of the season here. It was in March, and we're just outside of the playoffs. And after that party at Marquee, we ended up going winning 8 out of the next 10, and that's what got us into the playoffs. I mean, we ran into Tampa in the first round and lost in 5 games, I believe. But that was huge for us. It was a bonding point for a team, And it's like you said, when you have a big night out, that next game is the biggest one, because if you want to have nights out, you have to win the next night. We went into Vegas, beat them 8-3. It was a spanked them after having a hell of a night at Marquee.
Marquee's a great spot in Vegas. He used to go off back in the day. Before you touch on Hero Shops, for me, boys, I was in Nashville. You know, we've been battling with Detroit for first in the Central back in the day, and we had a big win in Vancouver. We had two nights off, or maybe three nights off, before we played Calgary. Huge win in Vancouver. I think we came back. Anyways, long story short, the whole team goes out. I mean, the entire team goes out to a certain extent, and most of the team stays out till late. So I get back to the fucking Westin for our boy Bully, Westin Bayshore, at 5:30. I still got my suit on, but my shirt's undone. And I'm walking in with a girl, right? And her outfit is, you know, she's got it out. And so I'm walking towards the elevator, and our assistant GM, Paul Fenton, is coming out of the elevator to make his flight. He's going to the Vancouver airport to catch his flight back to Nashville or wherever to go to scout. So I'm like, hey, sweetheart, this is like my assistant boss here, so if you could just kind of tighten it up. But there's no tightening up. We walk by him, and I'm like, hey, Fence, how you doing, buddy? He's like, don't worry, Obi didn't see anything. So I was like, fucking right. So I go back to the room.
Good guy.
I'm like, next day we have a team curling event. I show up in Trotsky, Obes. I'm like, fuck. He's like, what time did you get home last night? I said, Trotsky, it was a little late. But I go, Trotsky, it was a great night. Our team came together. Everybody was out. I'm telling you, the mojo we got going in this dressing room right now, like, don't be worried what time we got home. Like, we took a step last night, beating Vancouver at home. They were leading the Western Conference at the time. We're fucking Trotsky. Trust me, that night was huge. He's like, yeah, just slow down a little bit. I'm like, okay, I'll pick my spots a little better. He's like, I did hear you had some nice company with you, though. So Fence sizzled me, but at least he said I was with a decent-looking girl. So, Updog, do you have a night in your career that kind of jumps out, or throughout your career?
I had a bunch. But, no, you know what? Making things like a turnaround for a season a couple times, whether it's, you know, the much-needed All-Star break, the much-needed rookie party. There was one time in Philly we started off horrendously, like 1-8. And we went through the West Coast tour. We had some nights in L.A. that we were gonna get to, but we were so fucking shitty. And we played in San Jose, and we lost in San Jose, and we had a night off. And Richie and Jason Smith called a fucking mandatory team, like, boozing day at it, just this random pub. We went in there, and fucking Richie got absolutely juiced. And I remember him looking across, and I could see him, like, start looking at fucking Steve Downey, as in, like, Downey, you're a rookie, and you've been horseshit, but you're treating this like... And he kind of calls him out in a point where we're like, fuck, I think Richie's serious. Never really seen this out of him so far. And sure enough, that night, we're all pickled. I think we carried him home. We all had to carry ourselves home. From there on, I think we started 1-8. I think we won the next 12 of 14 and ended up making conference finals that year. So something like that, even it's not a huge bender, but it's just a night where you're like, you know, we're going out, we're getting shit-faced, we're going to hash all this shit out, and then we're gonna turn things around.
Yeah, no, the same thing happened to I'm not going to compare myself to Mike Richards. I was the captain of the team, but my first year in Vancouver, we lost 8 straight at home. And Willie Mitchell, a guy who I love to play with, I know you boys love Mitchie. I was in the doghouse with AV. We were losing, like you said, Uppy, and Mitchie was pissed off, and he went after Mason Raymond. And he was probably right. You know, Mace was the type of guy, I love Mason Raymond. He probably needed a kick in the ass at that point. And for me, my reaction was, I'm not going to let Willie Mitchell go after a guy who doesn't want to fight. And next thing you know, I come after Mitchie. We're fighting in the corner. Like, you know, and we ended up winning the next night, or two nights later, snapped our way out of it, and ended up having a good season. So not only is it come to when you go out with the boys ups, like you said, sometimes in practice, Broadway, you know, fuck it. We're men. Oh, yeah. We're doing a men's job. Sometimes shit happens when you're on a losing streak.
The Rob Bertuzzo and Zach Sanford situation.
Bobo got a 3-year deal.
Streaks were the worst. I remember the one year I was in Wilkes-Barre, we had a pregame skate tilt with a goalie and one of the forwards. These two guys had a fucking fight in pregame skate. I couldn't believe it.
The fucking pasta's overcooked.
Hey, me and Dustin Penner got in a fight, an optional skate in Atlanta my rookie year. And Big Pen put me in a fucking headlock. And I was, like, trying to throw punches, and I'm like, this fucker's going to choke me out UFC style. And that was one of my best friends.
You got in a fight with Penner?
At a morning skate in Atlanta, optional. There was, like, 6 guys on the ice.
How does that happen, bro?
You know what? I think we were probably a little...
I don't think it was because you guys were digging in the corners, battling for
no,
bucks.
No, well, I would say that we were at Cheetah's the night before, which is
okay,
so
here we go.
So we were out a
little
late.
It's a spillover from the night before.
We had probably thought that no one was skating in the morning, and then we probably got a text late night or early in the morning, probably the night before, when we were like, fuck it, we're still going to go out, that we had to skate.
Were you both in the lineup?
We were both in the lineup. And Yeah, so but I did something in Pens. You know, Pens, he's a funny, sarcastic fuck at times. I cross-checked him. The big man comes over. I drop my gloves right away. I don't even know if he dropped his gloves. He just put me in a fucking human headlock.
He's a big boy.
And I was like, I was a little lighter then, but I'm like, and I wasn't going to tap. I wasn't going to tap Cons.
Broadway, what if, would you let Penner put you in a headlock? No way.
No way. That guy is huge. Like you said, he's going to choke you out in probably under 10 seconds. So
no, but you're not letting him get his hands around you, Broadway. You're hitting him with a jab.
You got to string him out, Bulbs. You got to be ready. You got to jump him. Those are the guys you got to jump.
I was in a headlock. I was trying to punch like that, and I wasn't even getting them. And it was just like, but point is, I don't think a lot of people. Maybe they do, but sometimes through the course of a season, you don't see stuff that goes on behind closed doors. Sometimes it's a big night out with the boys that after a win that gets you to that next level, and other times up, like you said, it's a great point. You just gotta, you know, sometimes if it's a practice fight or a captain like Mike Richards calling you out, you know, we're all men. We respect that. And that's part of the game. If you're not performing your leadership, that's part of the group. So I just thought it was really cool that Stammer, you know, said that about the boys getting banged up.
It says a lot for their glue guys. That's fucking
I thought it was pretty cool.
A fight in practice is good intensity, right?
A fight in practice is good intensity for sure. So
does the coach like a fight in practice?
It depends.
Not when you're arguing about cheetahs.
Our guests just showed up with absolute beauties in the house. I always thought practice fights, obviously you don't want to hurt your teammates. You're not trying to put them through the ice, but it happens. You want practice to be intense.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Coaches go, look, these guys are fired up, but not when you're fighting about the club the night before.
Yeah, not if you're fighting over who paid for the fucking tab that they have for. But like, typically, I think coaches like it. And
It's hockey.
I always like
coaches love it.
I always like when there's a good practice fight going on.
And some of the young kids, they're looking around like, holy fuck, these guys are.
I remember
what am I getting myself into?
I remember the one kid, Colin Wilson, who actually just came out with a great article on the Players Tribune. And I didn't know this at the time that he was dealing with what he was dealing with, but I abused this kid in practice because I thought he had so much upside, and he wasn't. You know, he'd come to the rink joking around, and he was a rookie, and he's a great kid. It just didn't sit well with me. And every day in practice, I went out of my way. Maybe I'm a bully. Probably am.
But no, he appreciates it now.
I went out of my way to fucking cross-check him, finish my checks, get in his face, and be like, hey, Willie, yeah, you go out and have a good time, but you got to come here, buddy. This is why you can have a good time, because you put your work in. And when you're on a good team, you're a rookie, pay your fucking dues.
The bigger numbers you put up, the better time you can have.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks again to Stammer. He's a fucking beauty, and he was absolute legend last week.
He was great, but, dude, Getzlaf is still – in the history of Action Park, I got to say, Getzlaf was very impressive to me. Waiting on the jersey to be framed.
GM.
I actually played golf with Getzy a couple weeks ago, and I said, hey, you made a good impression on Connolly. He's compared you to Jeter, and he doesn't use Jeter comparisons lightly. So,
I don't. You know, I don't. So and he was also in the room. Maybe Stamkos was in the room. I don't know. But looking at Getzlaf, he's great.
Yeah.
We're actually just fresh off a Friday shamble victory, Getzy and I.
You
we just
won
a fuck,
the
we
fuck
won a sick,
team.
Sick
hey,
tournament
these two
at
guys
Pelican Hill.
The team cons at charity events.
We won these like glass sized dildo team. Trophies.
Does he hit
they're,
the
they're
shit
sick.
Out of
crystal,
the ball?
Crystal,
crystal dildos. I mean, you put him and Uppy on the same shamble team. It's
are they both lefties?
We're minus 13. Minus 13.
Whoa.
Getzy has a short little swing, kind of like Uppy, and just pounds it. And the one thing about
Getzy, he gets his hips through.
He gets his hips
through. Tony Finau.
Shakira. The one thing I will say about Getzy, and he would admit this, and it's shocking. I know he's one of your favorite players we wanted to play with. He can't putt. Oh, yeah. Or I shouldn't say he can't putt. His one weakness
is
putting.
No, he's stabby.
He's too big.
Yeah, he's got a long putter, but he's a little stabby.
For a guy that got such sick mitts on the ice, he's...
He wants to use his hands with the putter, too, Oppie. I can't blame him.
That's true. He wants to get a little wristy with it, doesn't he?
He's got
to
pick up the spider.
He might need the spider. Collins, we'll get you a spider if you want one.
I got a spider,
Oh, you got a spider.
What do you think? Wow. I got a spider.
Wow, look at you. We touched on RFAs last week, and you know what? Cons made a joke that Sweet Lou doesn't listen to the podcast, and I might have to disagree. I think Sweet Lou may be tuning into Mystic Curfew.
He is
there.
Not tuning into Mystic Curfew.
I think Sweet Lou shows up to whatever office they have there, and he said, let's see what the Mystic Curfew boys are saying. Jimmy Scoops, let's see what he's saying.
But I was right about Palak. They just can't let this guy go.
I want to ask you, Palak's deal, 2 years, 10 bananas. As an Islanders ambassador, what do you think? Good deal for both sides, I feel.
I think it's a team-friendly deal. Compared to what this guy's going to do this year.
And Broadway, I want to get your take on it. I think for him, take a 2-year deal, 5 bananas a year is a lot. See where the league is in a couple years, new TV deal. He may get, after 2 years, then he gets his real big ticket.
Yeah, that's like the smartest thing the kid did. He could have got himself locked into a longer-term deal. I bet they probably wanted to lock him into a longer one. But if he keeps performing at the level he's performing, this kid's going to be getting another pay raise, and he's going to be a high-paid defenseman in this league.
He really does have that, his demeanor. He's got that Shea Weber demeanor. You're not going to see him stumbling around the bar. No, well, not that I saw, but he just has that kind of serious, like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, how you doing, man? You know, you shake his head. He's a cool guy, but he's, like, serious hockey guy.
Yeah, no, it would be tough to get Webs out. And Nashville's such a small town. When I played for 1 year, but when you did get the big lumberjack out, look out.
We did get him to that rookie party.
Yeah, he could put them back.
Where Tutu smacked my drink out of my hand for no reason. But that's
I know. We'll get Toots on.
We'll have him on the pause to tell you exactly why he did that.
Collins, congrats on the deal. Sweet Lou, I think that's a good team-friendly deal, as Kevin said. Jimmy Scoops, what do you got on the East Coast with the boys working out when it comes to next season and the money and the escrow? What do you got?
There's lots of rumors. These guys are trying to figure out when do we stop working out? When do we start working on our game? So these guys are just up in the air with when the league's going to start. I mean, those guys are in there. They're training hard right now. These kids are in tip-top shape. I think that's the way, like Stamkos said, the NHL's going, you got to make sure you show up in the shape. But these guys are trying to figure out when are they going to start working on their skills. You don't want to get on the ice too early. Sometimes you get hockeyed out when you start getting on the ice too early. But there's a huge rumor. There's huge rumor right now with the owners thinking about letting the guys play without fans. But then that's going to become with another pay cut to these guys' check. So with escrow, another pay cut, and taxes going up,
You're playing for the love of the game, aren't you?
Yeah, well, hey, paycheck too. You got a family, bud. I got to take care of people.
Jimmy, any of these guys coming to work out in the mornings with any good stories about thumping any babes or what? Are they having fun? Are they having fun right now, or what are they doing?
Are the boys late to workouts?
Guys, a lot of these guys are having some nice COVID-friendly weekends. They're good. Having some not too much social distancing going
COVID
on during the weekend.
COVID-friendly weekends. Interesting. Let me sit on that one for a minute. I don't know what that means.
What I'm saying is not much social distancing going on. So anti-COVID, gotcha. I should have said.
Sleeping gotcha. In odd numbers, boys.
I would have liked to see, and I throw myself in this, though. I would have liked to see the Updog back in the day, mid-career, COVID happens. I would have liked to see what the Updog would have done.
He gets COVID early on purpose so he doesn't have to deal with it.
I think that's exactly
I would just quarantine the girls in my house for 14 days.
So, Broadway, one last question that I have. What, and obviously everybody's different, but I'm going to take like a Getzlaff and a Crosby. You know, these guys, these younger guys, Barzal, their bodies can still do whatever they want. But when you look at the Crosbys and the Ovechkins and
Getzlaff,
what are those guys doing? Like, did Getzlaff work out this morning? And if so, did he skate? Is he lifting weights? Is he playing hockey? Or is he doing the Upshaw Instagram workout?
Man, those Instagram workouts are fucking awesome.
I mean, you better warm up for those.
I like the ones where Uppy would do the one where he's running around the track. He looked like a fucking Gillette commercial.
No, or he running up doing the steps.
Doing the
stadium
steps.
I
said, dig in.
No tarp on every time.
No,
it's California.
He left it in the car. He didn't even bring the tarp to the track. It was in the car.
There's a method behind his madness, boys.
But seriously, Broadway, what do you think? Did your boy Getzlaff work out today? Did he skate? What did he do?
I think Getzy's getting on that Tom Brady workout plan. I think the older you get, like, he's a guy that's so big and strong. I think his strength's going to be there. But for him, I just think he's just staying sharp with his skills. That's the way to do it. I know guys like Keith Yandel, who've been in the league forever, he's showing up, he's working out. But he's always working on his skills in his game as well. I think that's where they're going to stay relevant because the game is so high-end with the skill these days. And, I mean, these guys are top-notch players. These guys are all-stars. But, I mean, you got to keep up with these kids.
Yeah, we played with Getze last week, and he had skated that morning.
Oh, so
he's back on the ice. And for Getze, and it's the same thing as Stammer touched on last week, Uppy, and you brought it up. And, you know, you went through a lot with rehabbing and keeping yourself ready and making a comeback. And just what Stammer said, I don't think they're in there – you know, doing squats and cleans and all this stuff. They're stretching out. They're getting their cardio in, and they're getting on the ice. And
right.
From what I've heard from Getze, Collins, to answer your question, is, yeah, he's back on the ice. I think he's going 3 or 4 days a week shooting pucks. Yeah, I mean, guy hasn't played a fucking competitive game since March, right? So even for a guy like Getze, I'm sure his body feels rested, but he's back. He's definitely back skating with the young kids and keeping those young fucks honest out there.
I know he's taking his new boat up to Havasu this weekend.
Did he get a fucking new boat?
I got the invite.
You did, huh?
You guys.
Does that mean the Sprinter's available for next week?
The Sprinter might be available. He's got the new. He bought the new Ford 250 diesel, so he's loading that.
So
he's
what you,
loading
you
the
guys,
family
you
up.
You guys stack one charity golf tournament together, and now you get the invite to Havasu.
Of course. Havasu's nice time.
Obi has a gleam in his eye. Look how excited Obi is.
I'm a little upset.
He's blushing.
Let's get out.
Probably worried. I'm too heavy to get on the boat.
No. Hey, you sit in that back left corner, that wave will be nice. Oh, a nice wave.
You'll get a good weight going,
buddy. I'm the best spotter back. I'm the best spotter back there. Oh no, up he went down. Turn the boat around. I love you, boys. We got a great guest coming in, an unbelievable old pro legend. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Missing Curfew. Up Dog, we have an all-time legend guest in the studio here today, a guy that we've known for a long time. 1,029 matches in the National League.
That's a couple.
Big numbers.
That's a big number. Russ Cortinel. Russy, thanks for joining the boys here.
Hey, thanks for having me. I Rusty screwed up babe. Already. I freaking drove here, and you guys are drinking beautiful red wine over there.
I know, right?
I think you mentioned that we'd have a glass of red wine. I thought you weren't serious.
I offered Rusty a glass of wine. He said no, and that was the first time since I met him he ever said no to a glass of red wine or a cigar.
In his defense, it is 11:30 a.m.
That's true. We
hasn't stopped.
You should have been here at 10.
You should see my Gaza Ranch that doesn't stop Rusty at 10.
So, yeah, Rusty, it's a pleasure to have you here. One of my all-time – I'll just kick it off, too. I met you about four years ago. Heard lots about you. Played in St. Louis where your brother was an all-time legend. Good-looking cat. I was told that no one had as good a hair as anyone since the Jeff Cortinel days when I showed up there. So that was good. But we played at Gosmer Ranch. We went in for what was called the Reverly Golf Tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And we just so happened that we fucking took the thing down, didn't we?
We took her down.
Was that the first time you guys, that was the first time you guys had met, right?
Yeah. It was, yeah. It was a late addition. Yeah.
Rusty, Kelly Chase.
Kelly Chase texted me the last minute. I actually hit him up. I'm like, hey, I got some boys that are members here at Big Canyon. They're all flying up for the golf tournament at Gosmer. And fuck, I'm like, any guys need a guy? You know, you need a guy? And fuck, sure enough, he's like, yeah, Rusty, actually, he's coming in today. He needs a last minute partner, so. Just so happened that they didn't know.
Just the chemistry.
We hit it off.
You get two beauties together like that and fucking good things happen.
Took about 60 seconds. We're best friends.
Yeah, you show up, the cigar box open, and you want a stogie. You're fucking right, I want a stogie. Yeah. You want a glass? Are we drinking tequila or are we drinking vodka? Anything.
I remember I texted up you throughout that thing. I said, how's it going up there? Because I hadn't met you yet either. I met you after. Or had I met you?
No. Yeah, we played golf at Sherwood with
Richardson.
Penner and Penner, you, and Loops.
Oh, that's right.
That's a long time ago.
But I'm like texting up you. I'm like, how's it going up there? He's like, fuck, Rusty's a beauty. We're having a great time. We're actually leading this fucking thing. And then I'm like, how much sleep have you been getting up there? He's like, oh, it's not a lot of sleep. He's like, this Gosmer Ranch is unbelievable.
Oh, I left my mark there, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. You fit right in, and it was a beautiful. Well, the winning part was great, but the 4 days of fun was. It was out of this world. It was so much
Disneyland
fun
up there.
Oh gosh!
For the listeners, Gosmer Ranch. We've talked about it, but it's in Idaho. It's a little discovery project. You know, Mike Melman owns all the beautiful golf course communities around the world, and Rusty's been working with them for 6 years. But a lot of good athletes there, a lot of good people who just enjoy life, and fuck, they do a great time putting these golf tournaments on, don't they?
Yeah, if Gosmer wasn't the name of the ranch, they'd call it Guzzle.
Yeah,
Guzzle Ranch.
Because that tree bar will get you, Rusty.
The tree bar this summer was shut down most of the summer because of COVID. It was the only thing that they didn't open, and so... That saved us. Yeah.
Where did you get the tacos on the tournament? Well, they were slinging the tacos out.
No, I know. They shut that. That was the only thing that wasn't really going. They had it open for a bit, and we had a little bit of a COVID scare, so they shut it down.
I will tell you, I will own a home in Gosmer.
Attaboy.
There you go. That's what Rusty likes to hear.
I'm going to go from L.A. to Gosmer from May to September, October, and that's it. I'm going to fish and golf all day long.
And Rusty, the place. For hockey players, you know, there's a ton of retired guys there, but there's been some current players that still play that are members there. It's a good setup for those guys because they take the boat over across the lake, right? They can skate there, work out there, tee it up in the afternoon. So it's a great setup for hockey guys.
It's been great. So Dougie Waite and Wayne Gretzky were the first two hockey players there. Gretz brought me up, and then Holly, and we've got Chaser and... We Sheldon Saray, Barrett Jackman, Morrow,
Whitney,
Carbo, Beauty. Whitney. I'm going to miss somebody.
Fucking good squad of a pickup.
Bobby
game
Ryan was there.
Bobby Ryan, Tyler Johnson, John Cooper, Coach John Cooper. So we were retired when we...
Cons Cooper creep.
Smug. I'm sure he's a great guy.
He took down the...
Yeah, that's not why. That's not why.
You'd love Coop. He's the best.
Funny things at press conferences.
I wish I played for a coach like Coop. But anyways, we were retired when we got up there, and but our kids were playing hockey, a lot of us. So we helped build this rink that had blown down in a snowstorm. The roof caved in. So we helped raise some money, had these exhibition games, raised some money. They built the rink, and then our kids could – we could stay there longer, and our kids could skate. And then current players started buying up there and, you know, were playing in the NHL still. So they were training. And like you said, they just take a little boat across, practice, play, and then – they're done, so they're able to stay there all summer long, and it's been a great place for current players and us retired guys that have kids playing hockey.
It's so beautiful.
It's amazing.
I mean, we could go on and do like a Gaza commercial. It's fucking epic. The golf course is awesome.
The golf course
is awesome.
Hard.
You should see that. You should see the Pilates instructor.
First class.
You should see the Pilates instructor.
I just remember coming back every morning and be like, oh, was that Pilates instructor smoking? I give you credit. You were making the comeback. You got your workouts in every morning, which
you
is impressive.
You had to. You
got
to stay. Rusty knows. In order to look like this, you got to stay in tip-top shape.
It doesn't just happen.
I would have been in trouble at Gaza. Like I say, it would have been throughout my career, Rusty. That boat going across the ski.
I don't know how many times
I would have been on that fucking boat, Rusty. I would have been with Rusty having lunch at the tree bar and then playing 18.
That's right. We'll take a pass today.
So, Rusty, we were talking on the way up, just where we're on this. How did you and Wayner become buddies? You guys never played together, did you?
We did. We played in Canada Cup in 1991. Okay. And then we played in New York in 97. I had a brief stint there. But
coffee in New York's not a bad time. Yeah. Not a bad time.
I met Gretz when I played for the Toronto Maple Leafs. He invited my brother and I to his tennis tournament in his hometown. And so that's when I first met him. And then we met at a couple other summer casual. David Foster had a big event in Victoria. I don't know if you ever went, Kevin. But we met at these charity events. So then every summer, we just started hanging out because I started dating my wife, and he was living in L.A., and my wife's Paris Vaughn at the time was an actress, so I was coming out here in the off season, hanging out with Gretz, playing golf, working out, skating, and that's our friendship grew from there. And his wife Janet was an actress too, so it was just a natural fit for us. And we've been friends for over 30 years. A
couple good Canadian lads. They just infiltrating Hollywood.
That's called living the dream up. Is what that's called. Yeah, that's called living the dream.
That's exactly.
So when you first moved out to LA, were you in Manhattan Beach, Rusty, with the boys, or when you first came out here, where were you?
So I lived in Hollywood Hills. I had a house.
Smart.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, smart. Veteran.
Mount Olympus. My wife had a condo in West Hollywood. Then we bought a house up in Mount Olympus, and then we moved to Hidden Hills when we had our first child, and then eventually moved to Sherwood Country Club. Wherever Gretz goes, I kind of follow. You know, Sherwood, he signed me in 1993. I've been a member there since 93. Gretz signed me in. And then Gozer, he's like, you know, I'm going to Gozer. I guess we're going to.
Sounds good.
The view from those coattails is not a bad view.
Yeah, he's been a great friend.
Anytime you can have this beauty around too, it doesn't hurt either, right? Winger's like, this guy's a beauty. I'll take you on my squad. Let's go.
Well, we've had in California too, like a couple Canadian guys played down here, ended up spending our summers here. When we're here, we don't know why anyone would rather leave and go home. But we had our boys, and you know, it's what Rusty had. And he was with his wife, but also you got to have your guys. You got to have your golfing buddies. You got to have guys you go for drinks with. Guys that. And you see the ball the same level as you, so
same agenda.
Same agenda.
And I always say that, Rusty, about when people ask about me up in loops, like obviously playing in the NHL is ultimate dream, but when you can do it with two of your best buddies on the same schedule living in California, it just makes it so much more enjoyable.
And the other thing too for us when we played living in California, because they had the Kings and then the Ducks, we were able to practice in this and play in the summer, so you could work out here all summer long no matter where you played. And then the Kings and Ducks would start skating August 1st,
and
the guys could jump in and so we played. We had all kinds of guys, and we had a lot of Russian players because their agent lived here in Manhattan Beach, and he would have them come out and skate with us, and it was a phenomenal skate. And you're hanging out in L.A. and going to the Roxbury a couple nights a week.
I love that Rusty said August 1st, though, because that's when it was for us, too. We're like, oh, August 1st?
Yeah.
All right, boys, dust off the gear.
Yeah.
And near the end of my career, I mean, the writing was on the wall. But
it caught up to us.
These guys started skating, Rusty, in July. And I'm like, What? There's ice in July?
Yeah. Canada, they're always just skating in
they're
July.
They're skating all year round. What else what's, you your thoughts, what's your thoughts on that? Like, as a guy, like, you think that's the way they have to do it nowadays?
It depends on the players. But for me, I was a good skater, so it was really more about my hands than anything and just getting, you know, getting used, getting the feel. And so the conditioning, I prided myself on being in good shape. And towards the end of my career, when I should have probably been working out harder, is when I started working out less.
Me too.
Because I fell in love with the game of golf and I was playing golf all the time. And maybe I won't do the bike today. But anyways,
Rusty, same thing.
I don't know about the skating thing. I think you need a few weeks, and then we had a long training camp. I just felt like you didn't need to be skating all summer. And I think it's the insecurity of athletes. They feel like if they miss out on July, you know, they're going to be behind, and that's what makes a lot of players great, is the insecurities they have that somebody else is going to be in better shape. And but I think you can get worn out by skating too much.
Was the competition back then as tight as it is now? Like, there's so many young players, the separation of skill and speed and talent it's minuscule. Is that a word?
I don't know. Uppy makes up his own word every week. That's a new upshot word.
Minuscule.
Minuscule.
Fuck it.
Rusty,
there was always guys coming in, and maybe not to the first round picks or the guys that are going to make the team right off the hop, but to guys that, you know, might have cracked the team due to some injuries the year before and might think they're there the next year. Like, those guys got to work that much fucking harder, because there's younger guys. And right now, I was Dallas Stars training camp last year. I thought all the younger players on the team that were already labeled to be in the AHL, I thought they could have been on this fucking team no matter what. By the way they skated, the way they handle pucks, shot pucks. We talk about shooting. Every kid can shoot now. But it's like, back then, the talent must have been a huge separation.
Yeah, and there were so many different players. Like, you know, you had your slugs, the guys that were the fourth line that could barely skate, and they were tough, and they had a role. And you had your first two lines. You kind of knew where you were set. And maybe they do now, but the talent now, everybody can skate. I mean, crazy. Watch the
Everyone's
game.
Like
everyone
Russ
can
Cardinal
fly.
Up there
everyone
today. Yeah.
can shoot Seriously. The puck. And when I played, it was, you could tell, like, when the slow guys were on the ice. I always said to young guys, after I went through it, my first 3 years, a little insecure about, was I going to stick? And then once you stick, and once you score 20 goals, you feel like, okay, I'm an NHLer, I've arrived. And then it was just like, okay, this is where I fit, and that's where I got to get in shape, and I got to go in there. And I'm not making the team, I'm on the team. And so that was an amazing feeling. But I used to tell young guys all the time, like Brett Hedekin, he was so uptight, insecure. And I said, Hedy, you've been in the league 3 years. You're going to play 10. You might not play 10 here, but you're a 10-year veteran. And I said to John LeClaire in Montreal, I said, John, once you score 20, you're going to have a 10-year career, because you might not play here, but there's another team out there who's going to think you can score 20 for them, and they're going to trade for you. So relax and play the game. And I told that to those two guys, and both guys came up to me later in their careers and thanked me, because once John LeClaire scored 20, he got 40, he got 50. I mean, he played with Eric. He's a great player. But he needed that confidence. And I feel for those young players that they go to camp, they're fucking studs, and they're already going to the American Hockey League. Yeah. And it happened too back in our day. Like, guys should have played on our teams, and they were cut right away.
Yeah.
Sucks.
Russ, you said about everyone can skate now, and throughout the COVID, I would flip on hockey, the NHL Network, and some games would come back from my eras. Granted, most of them were Winter Classics, but you would see the fourth line come on, and you could see the tempo of the game. It would literally, you know,
give everyone a breather, but the fans would stay up. Yeah, okay, here we go.
You'd see a couple big hits, and no disrespect to these guys, because a lot of my career I was playing against the fourth line, but you could see it would dip down.
Yeah, like but fans love fourth line hockey.
Yeah. The glass started fucking crowd. Like, you could, like, there was energy, but you could tell the pace of play would go down. Nowadays, the fourth line gets on, and if you didn't know who they were, the pace of play is the exact same as the first two, three lines.
I'll give you an example. When I played for the Minnesota North Stars, the last year they were in the league, they moved the team to Dallas. And a lot of fans down there in the beginning, they were explaining over the loudspeaker, like, that's icing. And they quickly caught on. And when Shane Cirla was our tough guy, he would go on the ice, the place would go nuts, and he would run a guy and miss him and slam into the glass, and he'd get a standing ovation. And he was, you know, our third, fourth line guy, tough guy, but they freaking loved him in Dallas.
I got to ask you, you mentioned that name, and I think you played with this guy, Pavel Bure.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember when Pavel fucking
knocked
Turla
with that fucking elbow?
Yeah. If that happened now, he'd be kicked out of the NHL. Yeah.
So we're playing, we have home ice advantage, and Chuck went out and fucking ran Pavel. And so my brother's on Vancouver.
This is in Pacific. This is back home.
Yeah.
This is home.
In Dallas.
In Dallas.
In
okay.
Dallas. So they just beat Calgary in seven. They had those last three games. They scored an overtime goal in each game. I think Pavel got game seven.
Yeah. Sick talk.
Anyway, so Pavel, I didn't know this about Pavel, but he's a tough mother. So I'm on the bench. I'm looking to the right corner and Chuck cross checks Pavel in the head. Pavel goes down in front of our bench, all the way down, full speed, comes across and frickin' nails Chuck an elbow to the head.
Sounds like summer there, out cold.
It's right near the end of the period, right? So we go in. Chuck's on the table getting looked at by the doctors. We're all getting ready, and he's going, no, I can go. And the guy's going, hang on, I got to ask you a few questions. And I'm walking by the medical room, and I couldn't help it. We're going back up on the ice. I go, he's about to ask him a question. I go, Chuck, just remember, because they're always going, do you remember? Chuck, just remember, you're a 50-goal scorer. And he goes, fuck off. Guy's just coming to. He's a mess. And I'm cracking jokes.
That's great. So I remember seeing that hit as a kid, thinking, "Oh, fuck! That is just—that's how you set the tone."
And what a body on Pavel Bure.
I know, yeah.
Two best bodies in hockey from my era were Boris Salming and Pavel Bure. They had freaking veins that started at their big toe and ended at their freaking neck. I mean, oh my god, just ripped.
I mean,
ripped.
I think it was the 30th anniversary of Pavel's first game in the NHL, maybe 35th. That just happened last week. So I was doing some stuff in Vancouver Sportsnet, and they showed some clips of him when he first got in the league. And fuck, boys, was he buzzing. I mean, like, I remember as a young kid how good he was. But when I saw these clips, like his two or three strides, like, you could fly too. But this guy was next
generational
level.
Generational player. Yeah. I loved him as a kid.
Well, we have social media now, so you see stuff all the time. Yeah. Everybody sees it, right? But back then, you know, if you didn't catch the late night sports, you wouldn't get all his stuff. Yeah. And Jeff, my brother, played with him, and he goes, Russ, this guy might be the greatest player. He goes, obviously Gretz is the greatest player, but this guy is unbelievable. You should see him. He goes, every time he's on the ice, it's a highlight video.
Yeah,
I mean, he was probably the only player I played with. When he got the puck, he got faster.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was fast.
You know, when we had the skills competition in Vancouver, he was the eighth fastest guy on the team on the lap. You know, they do the
He's
one
probably
lap.
Hungover.
Probably like, fuck, he was out with Rusty.
Is he the first one to go with the tinted shield? I feel like...
I don't know about that.
I think it might be worth looking up.
But
Pavel tinted...
I know Fedorov did, but I think
Bure might have led the way on that. We'll have to check it out.
I said it last week, a tinted shield in practice would have been a nice touch, Rusty. Any other trainer? Hey, I'll take that tinted shield this morning, please.
Collins, do you play golf with your shades on or no?
I do not.
Yeah, don't play golf
with your shades on.
It's
tough putting your
shades on. I wore a shield for a year and a half.
Do you ever smoke a cigar out there while you're playing?
I don't. It makes me dizzy.
Because this is the king of smoking cigars on the golf course right here.
Two on the front and two on the back.
Oh, yeah. He loves them.
I do two Bud Lights on the front and two Bud Lights on the back.
So Loops chirped me after The Last Dance came out with MJ. And I started smoking cigars, right? And Loops was like, you only started smoking cigars because of MJ. I'm like,
well, it's true.
No, actually, I'm going to give Russ Courtnell up at Gozer. I started smoking cigars with Russie, and I kind of fell in love with them. So they're just nice out there, especially after the round, Russie. That's why I really like to enjoy one.
I like them before, during, and after.
Let's dive into your career a little bit here, because you had an unbelievable one. And I got to give a shout-out to my boy back in Ontario, Jason Craig. I told him you were coming on the show. He's a big fan of yours. And I never knew this before. When you first came into the NHL, Updog, you could have jumped on this line. You guys were called the Hound Line.
Yeah, right? I ain't nothing but a hound.
And the first thing I thought was, fuck, Uppy's going to love the name of that. But it was you, Wendell, and Gary Lehman coming out of high school, right?
Yeah, so we all played at Notre Dame. We went to Notre Dame in Saskatchewan, Wilcox, Saskatchewan. Wendell and I actually played on the same team. He was a defenseman. A lot of people forget this, but he was drafted first overall, first pick. As a defenseman, never played forward and never played one shift in the NHL as a defenseman, played left wing.
Wow. Wendell Clark, folks.
Clark.
I knew that.
Unbelievable. This guy. Oh, so he, I got all day to talk about Wendell. And then Gary Lehman was a little older than us, so he played midget. And we, when I was there with Gary, he was in the midget team. I was on the Bantam team. So we started playing together in Toronto, but that's how we got the name.
I mean, if there's another great name in hockey for a line.
What was yours?
I got him up there.
Yeah, what was it?
I was on the Legion of Poon. You're fucking right. Well-deserved
really
line.
Who was on that line? You
Who was the line? Was,
well, it only happened for about a month and a half.
And then
we
broke
got too
up?
Hot off.
Yeah, yeah, like,
it was me, Lupul on the right. It was me on the left, Joffrey Lupul on the right, Mike Richards up the pipe.
Oh, wow. That's a good line.
And at that point, we were all doing pretty good damage.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was... You know, because the Legion of Doom was our boy
Leclerc, Lindros,
and Michael Renberg.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we just took over that. Actually, it was hilarious. This Mike Panaccio, or I don't know his last name. I don't know his first name, but Panaccio, he's a beat writer for the Philadelphia Flyers. He came into the room one day, and he's looking around. And he's like, you know what we ought to call you guys? You guys right here, you three right there, Legion of Poon line. Right? And everyone was like, that could be the funniest fucking thing that guy's ever said.
That's so great. The Hound line, though, fucking Rusty, that's unbelievable. And you touched on this guy, Rusty, and I grew up watching Wendell. I was a huge Leafs fan. I had Wendell Clark jerseys and Dougie Gilmore jerseys. And I was still to this day, Rusty, I'll go back and watch the All Heart video of Wendell. When I was still playing, I would watch it before big games. Was it good or bad? Probably bad. I ended up probably taking a minor. But just touch on playing with Wendell. I know he's big for you and just everything that, you know, helped you young in your career.
Yeah. So Wendell and I were best friends on and off the ice. And Clarky would say to me when shit hit the fan after the whistle, he'd say, count to three. If I'm not there in 3 seconds, I'm fighting somebody else. You're on your own. But he was such a good player, like great player. He could score and he could fight and he wasn't a big guy. And he beat the frickin' shit out of everybody. And I tell this story about Wendell because some people didn't get to watch him play or maybe watched a little bit of him, maybe didn't understand how tough he was. So we're in Detroit. We have a 5-on-5. I'm not a fighter. I'm maybe at that time about 178, 180 pounds. Clarkie's about 188. Gary Lehman's $1.84, and it's Probert, Kosher, Basil McRae was a rookie that year, Lee Norwood on defense, and Harold Schneps. everybody squares off, and so Basil McRae gets me in a chokehold, and he's just lifting me up, and I'm like, and like, he's lifting me off the ice, choking me. He knows he's not going to fight me. He's 225 pounds or 20 pounds. And Wendell Clark is beating the fucking shit out of Bob Probert at center ice. And it's like this, like, just fucking hit him square in the face. And he goes, Basil, if you don't fucking let him go, I'm going to kick the fuck out of you. And then Basil let me go. And that's how tough Wendell was. He came into the league and he just, it didn't matter if you were a tough guy or not. And if you wanted to fight, he dropped his gloves and just started swinging.
And he never,
it was unbelievable.
And
throw first, ask questions later.
And when I started fighting, and I'm not comparing myself to that, but I asked my dad, and my dad said, don't ask questions first.
Yeah,
just start fucking chucking.
Oh, yeah.
And I would watch Wendell, and I'm like, fuck, that's what Wendell does.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't jump, guys, but he goes to you.
If you looked at him,
he's going to fucking.
Yeah, yeah. And
there's a video on YouTube, All Heart, where Wendell's got this guy down from Minnesota, and he's
always
doing the chainsaw.
If you fell down on the ice, he jumped on top of you and kept swinging.
Yeah.
One of his best fights, and I talked to Rick talking about this, but Rick and Wendell fought in Toronto, and Rick is a Toronto boy, and so all his buddies are like, he's from the east side, and they're like, night before, are you going to fight him? He's like, fuck, I don't want
to fight him. I'm just trying to have dinner here. Fuck
yeah. So sure enough, they went, and it was a draw. I think it was a draw, and those two beat the shit out of each other. After the fight, they're like, good fight.
Rusty, is that when Talks, I don't know if you remember, was that when he was in Philly?
Yeah.
I remember that clip. Yeah. He came running in the corner. Wendell fucking dummied someone behind the net.
Mark Howe.
And Talks came flying in, and they went toe-to-toe.
How are you? Yeah, Clarky, the worst fight I ever saw was with Wendell. I almost puked. Kevin McGuire, tough guy, played in Toronto and Buffalo.
Good Irishman.
And Kevin thought he had to fight Wendell in training camp to make the team. And he should have fought Bob McGill or somebody else. He drops the gloves and goes after Wendell right in front of me. There's no – it's training camp, there's nobody in Maple Leaf Gardens except this. So you hear everything.
Oh.
Wendell hit him three times for 27 stitches, three different cuts, one, two, three. It sounded like a guy punching his fist through a watermelon, and I swear to God, I almost puked.
Oh, man.
It was the grossest thing I've ever seen. He only hit him three times, and his head just exploded all over the place, and there's blood
practice?
Everywhere. It was a training camp.
Training camp.
See,
back then, we used to
play. That ain't over the club
back
the night before.
Two
games a day.
Fights were always
That would make you want to fight
two
days.
You had to fight one time.
The fights were great, because then I got to rest.
Yeah, you either had to do it in the morning, or it's the afternoon, and by the afternoon, you're thinking too much about the whole morning. You're like, fuck, I should have just fought in the fucking morning game.
And then Clarkey and I were single, and we'd always go out after the games in Toronto or on the road and stuff. And every bar we went to, the guys would come up to Wendell.
Want to fight him.
Because he wasn't a big guy.
Weird thing. I've seen that with guys. It never made sense to me.
And Wendell's mom, I believe, was a school teacher at school he went to, so he was not allowed to fight at school because he'd have to come home to his old man, right? So he never fought off the ice. As soon as he put on those skates, he turned into, like, I can't wait to scrap.
Is that why he went to Notre Dame, maybe? Because, like, his parents wanted to get him away from the hometown. No. That was a lot bigger to play
for a better team.
Totally. Yeah.
But he scored. He broke the rookie scoring record, and he's getting a standing ovation, and we're on the bench. And he's doing this on waving to the fans, and he says to me, like, this as he's waving. He goes, I'd rather fight than score anything. He's waving to the fans.
So, Rusty, I was just going to ask you, like, I think you touched on it, but how was his demeanor away from the rink? Most of these tough guys I meet, like Marty McSorley, for example. I met Marty for the first time. He was skating with us in Kingston. He was waiting for a contract, and, like, Marty McSorley's coming out to skate, and I was like, holy fuck, Marty McSorley. You think you're going to meet this big, tough guy, and he's going to be like, and he was so soft-spoken.
Yeah.
Was Wendell kind of the same way away from the rink? Like, and then when he got on the ice, look out.
Yeah. All the tough guys were like that. They were quiet. Bob Probert barely said two words, you know. But Wendell was he was a real quiet guy, shy. I'd do all the talking.
Yeah,
and
you're pretty good at it.
Yeah.
When we went out, I did all the talking.
Yeah, I can see that.
Come meet my friend Wendell Clark.
Smile with a nice hair. Wendell, come here. I got a couple girls I want you to meet.
Rusty, I used to take the same job. It would work good for
both of us. But you know, the dangerous guys in the bar after the games were the guys who were the non-fighters.
Yeah, of course,
the guys who weren't tough.
Still had their teeth. Yeah.
Those guys were getting chirpy in the bars with your, and then you know they'd be looking around at the tough guys. Hey, come get it.
Like, hey, Wendell. Wendell, I got a problem over here. This guy's talking shit.
Clarkey is great.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that reached to finish off on Wendell was when he hit that guy in St. Louis behind the net.
No,
that was the one.
Bruce
clip.
Bell.
Yeah, as a clip I watched as a kid. It made me realize as a defenseman to always keep your fucking head up. Obviously, there was not many Wendell Clarks out there, but when he hit that guy behind the fucking net, Rusty, I was like, and then the next guy jumped him and he beat the fucking wheels off of him.
So Wendell had this, he would come flying around and hit shoulder to chin every time. And this guy was, Bruce Bell was wheeling around the net and Wendell laid him out cold. Like he was done. Anyways, Charlie came in, he was 6'5" or something. Drops his gloves, and then he'll do the Michael Jackson backwards. Oh, shit! Like,
that's what Halsey said, too.
Holly said that to me.
Wendell just beat the shit out of him, so there's two guys laying on the
Rusty,
ice.
This is hilarious. Last year at the Revelry tournament,
Do you remember the one guy, he threw a piece of fruit at one of the boys, that there was a little fight? A little melee at the clubhouse last year.
Oh, yeah, a fight at the Gazer clubhouse?
So listen, it doesn't happen all the time, but there's a little tussle.
So rumor has it that Uppy might have had something to do with it.
There's a little tussle in the fucking dining room.
But can you give us some context?
I heard. I wasn't there. I was already at the tree bar waiting for the boys.
That was the dance party. They had the full 70s dance party in there.
And Upshaw, he may or may not have been.
I didn't do it.
I mean, he may not have been getting a little friendly with certain people.
So
I don't know. This
is
just what I heard. It's not true.
I was on the dance floor doing my thing. I was with my buddy's wife. Bridget, we were dancing on the dance floor, and next thing you know, bananas and
there's
fruit
a piece
are
of
flying,
fruit being tossed around. At people.
There was a guy on that, not at me. There was a member on the bar acting like he was.
Yeah,
thank you, Rusty.
Yeah. No,
something special.
I'm just trying to spice the story
an
up.
Orange might have hit him in the head.
Might have hit that guy in the head.
The fight breaks out.
Someone just chucks
so
it.
So I'm at the right? tree bar, and the guy who works at Gosser comes down and says, the tree bar is closed. And I said, listen, I'm not a member here, but from what I've just realized, this tree bar doesn't close very often. What happened? Like, the tree bar's closed. Like, are you nuts? It's never been closed. I've been here 3 days. There's been an altercation in the grill. So whatever, we have a
were
good night.
Were punches thrown?
I don't
know. No.
Almost, but no, Chaser the, broke it up yeah, before yeah. anything happened.
So what did Uppy do?
We have a good night. We go to the tree bar.
I just kept dancing.
He moonwalked out of the fight.
So then the next morning, me and Uppy are taking Craig Manchester's 4x4 to tee off, and Halsey's out front, and we pull up, and Uppy gets out, and Halsey's like, hey, Upshaw, good job starting that fight last night. Way to chip in. Way to moonwalk your way out of there. And I almost fell over, man. I almost fell over. I was like, it's so
you're
good.
Not fighting it, Gaza. Good for you.
Hell no. I'm playing right golf. I'm dancing. I'm smoking cigars with Rusty.
It was just the way Halsey delivered it with his voice. Yeah. I fucking laughed. You laughed.
Holly
too.
Is the funniest, one of the funniest human beings in planet Earth. And and I didn't play with him, but every hockey story you hear of this guy is...
So good.
Is all his hitch stories.
Yeah, we had Stamkos on last week, Rusty.
You got to get Holly.
Yeah, you guys.
He was talking about with Oatsy because he works with Oatsy. And Oatsy brought up Brett Hall. He said Brett Hall's ability to take a pass, you can never give Halsey a bad pass. Right. And that's what Oatsy was trying to put in Stammer. And Stammer says a lot of the reason why he's such a good guy at one time and getting on a knee is because of Halsey.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Holly was the best. I mean, you just got the puck anywhere near him and it was going to be on net and accurate. Guy's a stud.
Yeah.
Just an absolute stud.
So, Rusty, I was just curious.
Let's talk about the cities Rusty's played.
Yeah, you didn't play.
Sorry to cut you
no,
off.
No, you go.
Because this is curfew, missing curfew podcast here. We're all about missing curfew and playing in good cities and talking about the good
or
cities.
Or not playing in good cities.
Yeah, I know. But Cons is leading the charge, too. He fits right into this. But, yeah, we've always asked, our guys, where's the most favorite either place you played or city on the road? When you were playing, what was your favorite city to go to on the road?
Depends. Chicago was a great city for the road, but when I played for Montreal and we'd go across Canada and play, it's unbelievable. The fans that come out that are diehard Montreal fans. Every city we played in Canada except for Calgary would
be
have
half,
more.
Be half,
yeah,
half.
Half. And then, of course, when you know when you're single and going to the bars there, oh my God!
Oh, look
it was
out.
Just, it's so still, funny. It Winnipeg was one of the best cities.
It was when they came back in the league. Winnipeg was one of the best cities too.
But before they left, it was there's nothing to do there in the wintertime.
No, you just
all the farmers' daughters from all over the fucking the province. They come to live in Winnipeg. Where else are they going to go?
Rusty, people ask me best road city. I always say Montreal.
Yeah,
like you play Montreal on a Saturday night, win or lose. If you're staying overnight, you go out that night.
Yeah,
the city's buzzing, especially if they won. It's almost
what's your batting average?
It's almost better to lose.
1,000
in Montreal.
Yeah,
I was single. Obi, did you say it's almost better to lose?
It's almost better to lose because Montreal, at least they're all happy then, right? Like all the Montreal Canadiens lost, but if you lose, they win,
then the home team guys still get their kills, and you get
the guys. I mean, Rusty, it was different when you played, but some of the guys that played Montreal that I know, they can't even go out nowadays. Maybe it was different when you played.
I was there 4 years. My first 3 years, I was single. I'll tell you how good it is in Montreal and how crazy it is, the Montreal Canadiens. Patrick Waugh was our starting goalie. Brian Hayward was a great goalie. He was our backup. Hazy's in old Montreal with his wife, and in comes Mick Jagger and somebody, and they sit beside him. And so they're sitting there, and they're just going, oh, I can't believe it. Mick Jagger's right beside us having dinner. The chef comes running out with a pad and paper right down the aisle. He turns his back on Mick Jagger and he goes to Brian Hayward. Can I have your autograph? He turns and runs back into the kitchen, waving it like this. And Mick Jagger goes, excuse me, who are you? Hey. And he goes, I'm the backup goalie, or I'm the goalie for the Montreal Canadiens. He goes, well, I'm buying you dinner tonight. I've been all over the world. That's never happened to me.
Fuck, that is Montreal in a nutshell.
Oh
right? That is the greatest story I've ever heard from Montreal.
Montreal, like, it was crazy there.
The backup goalie.
Like, I used to go to this little restaurant called Da Vinci's. And back then, if there was another team in the restaurant, you didn't go in. So if the opposing team was in Da Vinci's and they were there first, you'd go to another restaurant. So we went to Da Vinci's a lot. It got to the point where I had to eat in the kitchen because... Like, they were just, like, the people who were in there, they just kept coming over and asking me. I didn't mind, but the restaurant was like, Russ, these people will not eat their food, and they're not leaving, and we've got people waiting. And it was just like the love of the game.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, the crazy part is, like, you know, listen, obviously you always appreciate fans. Like, the one weird thing is when you're eating.
Yeah.
It's the only time where it's like.
When you're single and by yourself, you don't mind.
Slide on over here.
Hey, see that spot at the bar in the corner? That was my spot for four straight years while I was single in Montreal.
Yeah. No, that would bug you constantly.
No, it wouldn't bug me, but, like, there are times where people, where they don't mean it. They don't mean to be a certain way, but if you're actually in the middle of a sentence, whether it's with your girlfriend or in a meeting, and you're actually chewing on your food. Also, too, when you're on a show like Entourage, people think they know you. So, guys got me in a headlock and giving me noogies. And I'm like, yo, bro, I'm 40. I don't do noogies.
At least back then, they didn't have camera phones.
Right.
So, they went up and they said, hi, we're fans. Yeah. How are you? And then that's pretty much it. They're not like, can we take a photo? And it interrupts everything. It's nothing.
Yeah, or it was like the autograph days, right? That was the big thing, which is worth, you know. I mean, I guess it's different in sport.
Unless you're signing some panties or bras and it's a little different. That's worth, worth a million bucks.
I usually go with a headshot, but, you know.
To each their own.
To each his own.
So you guys have social media today, or the players today. Back then, they had the radio and the TV. So we're playing. Montreal Canadiens were up playing against Quebec. Quebec was young and good, but we beat them most of those games back then. And Guy Carbonneau, myself, and one or two other guys might have stayed at what was that bar upstairs in Quebec? I'll remember it.
Come on, Obi, you don't.
I've never been. I've never been to Quebec City. I've been dying to go. I've never been.
I've never been. I won the Pee Wee Quebec tournament.
Here we go.
Silent.
So we stayed.
Did you go to the bar in Pee Wee?
No, but we were getting hand doogies in the stairwell.
So we stayed. We might have stayed out a little late past curfew. So we get to the rink before the game in Quebec. We're in the locker room, and we always had a big ghetto blaster for our music. And the guy has on the radio station says, tonight, I think in French, he says, the Quebec Nordiques are going to beat the Montreal Canadiens because Carbonneau, Richer, Courtnell, and Corson were at Dago Bar till 1 o'clock in the morning. And all I see is Carbo rip the cord out of the wall and told our trainer to put the music away because he was worried Pat Burns was going to walk in and we would have got busted by a fucking DJ.
Were you on the Canadians when Patrick Waugh let up all those goals and he skated off the ice and quit?
No, I wasn't. And I was not there. So, we've all seen that.
Oh, what an intense clip. And boy, did he mean business.
Yeah. Well, he went over. The guy,
that was no bluff.
The guy sitting behind the bench was Ronald Corey with the Molson family. And he went over to Ronald Corey, the president of the team, and probably said, this is my last game or I wanted to be traded. And then
he probably said that along with a couple other things.
And then he told the coach, fuck you.
Call this tabernacle. Call this tabernacle.
And that was it. That was his last game.
Yeah, he was. That was no bluff.
He said, I'm out of here.
Rusty, Jimmy Hayes, our third guy, who's not on this interview today, but he asked, we had Screwy. Brian Screwley
as
our assistant coach in Florida. We all
Screwy's a beauty.
And he's like, ask him, he's like, because Screwy cracked us up all the time. He was just like
I love Screwy.
He pumped us up, but I guess he always used to say the 1 year he got paid the most money per minute played because they'd always put him on like for the last face off of a game after the after the team would score like the empty net goal or just so he's like, ask Rusty if you got any good Screwy.
Screwy was the best, and
Brian Screwley.
Brian Screwley. Yeah, Brian played together in Montreal, and
was he your captain there?
No, he was an assistant captain. We had Bob Gainey my first year, and then Shelley and Carbo my second.
Did you play against Mike Bossy ever?
Yes, yeah, played against LeFleur and
curious.
There you go.
But Screwy was a beauty and third line checking centerman.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yep. Great guy. Great player. Great teammate. And when we go on the road, we have so much fun. It was McPhee, Screwlin, Brent Gilchrist, myself. We'd go for dinners. And Screwy never shut up. And Mike McPhee would just laugh at all his jokes. He never said a word. And we drank a lot of wine. We drank a lot of beers. And we had a ton of fun. And this one day in Montreal, we had a great team my first year. We lost the Stanley Cup in 89 to Calgary. So we had a great team, so do they. And so we won most of our freaking games, right? So Scurry had a party at his house for the Grey Cup. And
That's the Super Bowl.
So
we go watch the Grey Cup. We go downtown and we went out, all the young guys, we went out and Scurry just kept pounding. We had practice the next day. He showed up 20 minutes late. And the trainer's going, no, you can't go on the ice. You can't go on the ice. And Scurry came out, and he was still shit-faced. And Pat Burns calls everybody and blows the whistle, calls everything in, everybody in, and the media is behind him. And Montreal, they're just looking for any story.
Yeah, it's
right?
Like the Yankees.
Oh, my
right?
God. So he, all over the place. Now Pat Burns is trying to figure out how he's going to downplay this.
Right.
This guy is, like, wobbling on the ice, right? So he goes, okay, everybody, look at me, nod your head. Okay, practice is over. Everybody get off the ice. Scurry, get the fuck off the ice. And then they put him in the trainer room, and they said he had a flat tire.
Put IV in him.
Pulled a hammy.
Scurry was fucking hammered out of his mind. Anyway, Scurry's a great guy, played hard, won a Stanley Cup. Or a couple, I think. He won one in Dallas, too.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, at the end. He would come up to me. I went on a PTO near the end of my career with Florida, and Scurry was, what was he, some kind of player development or something.
Yeah, but he took over. He got the assistant coach job when we fired Dineen.
Oh, he did, yes. Yeah. But he would come in every morning and be like, oh, but you're having a fucking great camp. Keep it fucking going. I'm And then one morning I didn't see Scurry. I'm like, where's Scurry? Anyone seen Scurry? I need someone to
I got to make sure I'm playing well.
I need someone to get me going here. Where's seen Scurry?
He was great. Energy up the yin yang, man.
You could just tell he was
Saskatchewan boy.
Oh, yeah. He's great. Scurry's awesome.
So, Rusty, the one last question we could sit here all day with you. Just a curfew thing back in your day. How did it work for you, boys? Like, In our time, we talk about it as it was a guideline, but and back in the day, was it talked about, or was it just kind of same thing, be a pro on certain nights, know when to go, know when not to go?
It depended on the team. The better the team, the more lax it was. But there was definitely a curfew, and it was 11 o'clock usually, night before a game. It depended on the coach. Pat Burns, when I was single in Montreal, he used to phone my frickin' house, and hang up, and I knew it was from the bar. And it'd be 11:05, and I'd be asleep. But he was, he wanted to catch guys once in a while to set the tone. Like he caught a couple guys, some one guy to the minor. So it just depends who you played for. Larry Robinson, it was a guy line. My last 2 years in LA, and so I called that the farewell tour. I didn't make too many of those curfews, but.
He loves that one.
The one story I have about curfew was in my early in my career, maybe my rookie year. Rick Vive was our captain in Toronto. He missed curfew. They take away the C from him, and then we play the next day. We were there in Minnesota for a couple days, so we play a Sunday afternoon noon game. And Boreas Salming says, you know what? We're going to stand up to the coach and the manager, what they did to Rick. We're all going to miss curfew tonight. I'm like, fuck. First curfew I'm ever going to miss. First one of my career. So we're all at this bar, and they're looking at me like, the kid's going to run. I stay till 10 minutes after midnight. Curfew was at midnight. I get in a cab. I freaking fly back. I'm shitting myself. And it was like a motel, this Marriott outside the old rink there in Minnesota. And I run down one hallway, open the door, run down the next hallway. I get to the third hallway, go up second flight, get in. I open the door. Brad Smith is my roommate. And I go, I made! Dan Maloney is standing there with a pen and paper checking curfew. I run right into the fucking head coach. Those two, he's hammered. The other... Motor City Smitty's hammered. They start fighting in front of me. I'm like, I'm sitting there going, I'm in my suit and tie. I don't know what to do. And so I'm so freaking nervous. I just start taking all my clothes off, throw them in the closet, and I jump in bed. I didn't know what to do. And they're wrestling in front of me. So that was my first experience of missing curfew. And I think the only time I got caught.
See, that's what I told you about curfew. If you're going to miss it, miss it late. Don't just miss it by 30 minutes. If you're going to miss it by a couple hours.
If you're going to do it, go all the way with it.
Go all the way.
Brent, 10 minutes.
Well, he was a young kid. He was a little nervous.
I'll tell one more, and you guys can play it or not. But Brent Gilchrist and I were in Vancouver playing for Montreal Canadiens. Pat Burns, our coach. And we had just I think we swept Alberta and we're going to have an afternoon game or something in Vancouver. It's New Year's Eve in Vancouver. We fly in. Coach says, you guys can stay out till, you know, just stay out till 12:30 and make sure everybody's in. Enjoy the night. You guys had a great couple games in Alberta. We got a big game tomorrow afternoon. And so we go to the Roxy and we went to Richards, and then my younger brother's living in Vancouver, and he says, I'm going to have a few people over. We're just, Brent's not playing. I'm full of energy. Okay, let's go for a couple more. And then it's 9 o'clock, 9 a.m. his pregame meal. Now it's 5, 6, 7. We go, fuck, we got to go. So we're still in our suits and ties from the Calgary game. We roll in, we get in at 7:30, 8 o'clock, 8:30, something like that. And who do we run into in the fucking lobby? Pat Burns.
No way.
And he goes, you guys couldn't sleep last night either, man. It was brutal. That fucking party that was going down the hall. And Brent and I said, yeah, we just went for a walk and we're just getting ready. We're hoping that we can have pregame. Hopefully it's early. And he goes, yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Come on, let's go. So Brent and I are like breathing out of the corner of our house going, we just want to eat and have a 2-hour nap before the game. So we sit there with Pat Burns, eat scrambled eggs, toast, whatever, go up to our rooms, and we're like, oh my God, he doesn't know. And this guy used to be a cop.
Right.
He doesn't know. So we were shitting ourselves. Now we're fine. We have a nap. We go to the game. Gilly goes out for a warm-up, and Coach comes over and goes, hey, I'm not going to dress Carbo tonight. He's not feeling well. You're in. And Gilly got first star. Two goals. Yeah.
Good for him.
That's old school. That's old school stuff there.
So, hey, shout out to your handsome lad, your 22-year-old boy, Lawton, who's just signed where? Wheeling?
Yeah, Wheeling.
L.A. Kings draft pick.
No, he was never drafted. He went to the Kings camp. He went to a couple camps. Columbus had him to a camp. Anyways, he just signed with the East Coast Hockey League team, Wheeling. Nailers.
Yeah,
Wheeling Nailers. Yeah. Paul Bissonnette, I think.
Yeah. So he's leaving there for a couple weeks. He just graduated from Western Michigan, where he played for Andy Murray, and they're a big fan of you guys.
Yeah, so they heard.
Their team loves your show.
He's a good cat, handsome fella.
24 years old.
Yeah, fuck to be 24 again, eh?
Right?
To be 24 back. Again, that'd be nice.
Rusty, anything exciting going on for you with Discovery right now? What are you guys doing? Any new projects?
We've bought James Island, and we partnered up with Craig McCaw, who used to own the island. So we're Mike Melman and Craig have done a deal. And so we were supposed to start selling last summer taking reservations, I should say, for property. And then the border got shut down with COVID.
James Island's in Victoria, where you're
from,
Victoria.
Right? Victoria. Yeah, so it's my
hometown.
How
pretty is the island?
Beautiful. It's beautiful. It's almost 800 acres. They built a Nicholas course there in 1998. It's kind of already like a Discovery property. It's got the tree bar, it's got a bar on the ocean, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful property, and we're excited about that. But with COVID and the border, we haven't been able to take anybody up there.
I haven't even seen my parents yet. They haven't even met my daughter.
Wow. Crazy.
So we'll figure that stuff out, I think, here in the near future.
Yeah,
I haven't met my new nephew, Smith. I haven't met him.
Oh, wow.
I haven't been home since last Christmas, so I'm going home for Christmas.
Nice.
Hopefully I don't have to quarantine for 14 days.
Go through Alberta.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, Calgary is 2 days.
Is that the way to do it? Yeah, I guess that's the way to do it.
2 days, but they want to make you stay for 14.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Let's go through the phone and see if I know anyone in Calgary. Might work out well, but for people in Vancouver, everything Discovery does, Rusty, we love you.
Thanks for the gifts, bud.
Yeah, you came absolute
rolling in here with a picture of our championship title.
Yeah, Uppy's going to put that right in his garage. He's
You're
got every
right
sick picture in there, TV in there, so it'll be great. And we got Sherwood on Thursday thanks to Rusty, too. So I haven't played Sherwood since the last time, so I'm looking forward to
we'll
it.
We'll be posting that on our Instagram.
1220.
1220, perfect.
Yeah. We'll bring you some merch. We've got rocked and loaded, and then I guess we're staying the night up there. Yeah, we're going to have a few.
Yeah.
And then watch the Masters
on
the weekend.
We'll get in one.
Can't wait, boys. Conj, as always, thank you.
Weird, another golf outing. I'm not invited.
Can we play 5?
Says who? I think we can play 5.
There you go, bud.
All right, great
show,
boys.
Rusty, thank you, buddy.
Thanks, bro.
Have been shaken to the top. The shake he drove his Cadillac. He went cruising down the bill. The prison was a standing.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.